Discovering stories of people living out their beliefs in our culture, communities, and the public square. And finding courage, determination, and hope. Welcome to Faith Radio's On the Road. Now, here's Ryan Thomas.
We all have big dreams, not just the check every item off this week's to-do list kind, but big dreams. Dreams we've had since we were small. Maybe we don't even dare to verbalize them, but they're still there. Today we meet a man of great faith who spent a quarter of a century living out the dream he first had at the age of 8 as we head on the road with Jim Cott. Jim spent 25 years pitching in Major League Baseball, 15 of those with the Minnesota Twins, and he is a longtime award-winning television analyst of the game for the Yankees and currently for the MLB Network Showcase. His new book, just released this spring, is called If These Walls Could Talk, New York Yankees. And Jim, it is a real treat to chat with you today, sir. The last time I had the chance to talk with you, I believe you were traveling the nation in an RV. So what do we find you doing today, sir?
Well, I don't have the RV anymore, but I was with Margie at that time, and we had just gotten married, and we didn't know exactly where we wanted to live in the summer, but we found a great spot up in Vermont, and so that's where I'm spending my summers. And then when it begins to get a little cold here in October, then we move down to Florida for the winter.
It sounds like you have some geographical wisdom, sir.
Well, it's worked out pretty well for me, yes.
We're glad to hear you're doing so well, Jim. Well, I'm really looking forward to digging into your story a bit because it's such a fascinating tale, and I think so many of us, you know, baseball fans, of course, and those who have dreams of any stripe. But I want to highlight your latest book right here off the top, as you note right away at the open of the book, If These Walls Could Talk, New York Yankees. The Yankees elicit strong reactions, Jim, from just about every baseball fan, whether that's tremendous affection or fervent dislike. So from your unique perspective, playing for many years against the Yankees and then analyzing their games on TV, what was it about this team that made you want to write the book?
Well, Tom Bast, the publisher at Triumph Books, they published my first book, which was primarily about my career and baseball stories. And now they've started a series with announcers that follow different teams, and I followed the Yankees for 13 years during some really good years that they had. And there's a lot of things that go on in the broadcast booth and interaction with players, and just from a television standpoint of what goes into a telecast, that I didn't know if there would be enough there to fill up a book, but that was the idea. And I said, well, I'll find a writer that's familiar with television writing, which was Greg Jennings, and we had a lot of fun doing it, and so far it's gotten a nice response.
So what can people, if they pick up the book, expect to discover? What kinds of tales and what kinds of interesting baseball nuggets in If These Walls Could Talk?
Well, you know, once you get in the broadcast booth as a former player, there's always a challenge as you see something on the field. As I told in one of my stories, a little bump in the road that I had with Alex Rodriguez, he was having trouble getting hits late in the game, pressure situations. They were throwing the high fastball by him. And I did a split screen on TV with Derek Jeter to show how Derek does do well in those situations. He has a shorter swing. And so it came across to Alex as rather critical, and I saw him the next day, which I always do around the cage, and I said, hi, Alex, how you doing? And he kind of gave me the cold shoulder. And so that went on almost all year. And then the next spring, he reached out to the Yankee public media relations director, and he said, I want to talk with Jim. So we went in a little back room there in Tampa, Florida, where the Yankees trained, and he said, you know, I had a lot on my plate last year, and I probably shouldn't have reacted the way I did, but he said, let's start over this year. And I said, well, that's fine with me. I said, what the player has to understand is I'm not your PR man. I work for the viewer.
Right.
And if I see something going on in the field, that I have to report to the viewer why it's happening. And he understood that. But there are a few little stories like that. Nothing really that caused a lot of acrimonious feelings, but those are just some of the things that you're challenged with as a former player, because as I told Alex, if you hit 50 home runs every year, knocked in 150, and the Yankees won the pennant, that would make my job very easy, because there's never any failure to talk about. But from a player's perspective, a former player, I have to tell people what I see, why it's happening, and maybe what could be done to correct it. And I think players understand that a little bit better today. But he was going through a lot that first year in New York. I think now, as he's come back this year, he's a more gracious, grateful player. He appreciates the game, and I had a nice chat with him last week, the game that he hit his 3,000th hit, which was a home run. I have to announce that game, and so we have a good, warm relationship now, but that's what some of the stories are about.
Understood. Well, some fantastic insight from Jim Cott, a 25-year veteran of Major League Baseball, a longtime award-winning television analyst of the game, and currently working for the MLB Network Showcase. The book is called If These Walls Could Talk, New York Yankees, and you're listening to On the Road here on Faith Radio. Now, I can't resist, Jim, turning the corner back to the days of preteen Jim Cott. I understand and have read that you wanted to play Major League Baseball since the age of 8. What was it that first put that dream in your heart?
Well, my dad was an avid baseball fan. He wasn't a baseball player, but he was an avid fan. And, right after the war, as we call it, us old-timers, the war, World War II,
mm-hmm.
Baseball made quite a resurgence then. Guys were coming back from the service, and it was a big relief for people to go out and watch a baseball game. And he was very interested in the Philadelphia Athletics. For some reason, he took a liking to them and their owner, manager, Connie Mack. And they had a Hall of Fame pitcher named Lefty Grove. That was really the first baseball hero that I heard about.
Sure.
And I really got attracted to the game. I played it a lot. I listened to games on the radio. And whenever anybody would ask me, well, what are you going to do when you grow up? I said, I want to be a Major League Baseball player. Because none of the other sports really, I played a little basketball, but none of the other sports at that time were really attractive from a career standpoint. Baseball was the only game in town.
Of course,
and,
of course.
Yeah, so it was a natural for me, but that's really where I got my interest, is from my dad.
Well, that's fascinating. And, of course, the legacy of fathers to sons is so rich in baseball. I imagine that when you told folks, most folks at that point, that your career choice was going to be a major leaguer, you didn't get a lot of positive reactions at that point?
Well, no, because the number one obstacle was I was really the smallest kid in the neighborhood and the smallest kid in my class. And they'd always say, oh, little Jimmy, he really likes baseball, but he's so small. Well, the Philadelphia Athletics had a pitcher named Bobby Shantz, who was 5'7", and had a terrific career. In fact, won the most valuable player one year. And I would hear announcers describe his motion when they came in to play the White Sox. I could pick up the Chicago station, and I would go in the backyard and practice his motion. He was an excellent fielder. And when I signed my contract to play professionally, I went to spring training. Well, the first spring training, we were going through pitcher's drills, and all of a sudden the coach said to me, you know, kid, you look just like Bobby Shantz. Now, at that time, I was 6'3", but I picked up my motion from Bobby Shantz, and I think it's a lesson to kids. In that era, we believed in the American dream, and
yes,
it's still out there. But what young people, I think, have to realize is it's not the American entitlement. It's the American dream. And you don't get things handed down. You have to figure out what you'd like to do and dedicate yourself to it and work at it. And it wasn't really work for me, but I enjoyed the practice and followed it and believed that it would happen, and I'm very grateful that it did.
And, of course, when you talk about that hard work, tell us a bit about what the road was like to the major leagues for you. I mean, I've heard before that you spent some time in some minor league clubs in Missoula, Montana, perhaps. Was it a straight road for you, Jim, or was it a pretty long road to the major leagues?
It was a pretty fast road for me, and I credit, again, my dad. I didn't realize this at the time, but I speak when I speak to groups, I bring this out because it just wouldn't happen today, and it's a good insight into the fact that my dad let me live out my dream and not try to live as happens today. Little League parents, they kind of want their son to live out their dream.
Sure.
And become a player. But when I was scouted at the time, if you got more than a $4,000 bonus, you had to go to the major leagues. You sat on the major league roster for 2 years, and pretty good chance you weren't going to get much opportunity to pitch at that level, because at 18 years old, you're not ready to do that. And I was set to sign with Washington for a $4,000 bonus, which I did. I went down to Superior, Nebraska. But before I signed, the Chicago White Sox scout called the house, and he said to my dad, I heard your son is going to sign to play professionally. And my dad said, I think we're going to sign with Washington. And he said, well, I think I can get him $25,000 from the White Sox, because I think he's going to be in the big leagues in 2 years. Now, that didn't register with me at the time, because all I was interested in doing was going out and playing.
Sure.
And I started adding it up. My dad made $72 a week. So, and I think it was quite a decision when I think back and think that he gave up, which was the equivalent of about 5 or 6 years' salary, and just said, you're going to go to the minor leagues and learn how to play the game right and work from the bottom up, not start at the top. And he had studied this. There were a lot of players that got, as we called them, bonus babies. They got $25,000, $30,000, as high as $50,000. And they went and kind of rotted away on the big league bench for 2 years, and they never really realized their potential. And I was fortunate that I did go to the lowest minors, and I did make it. I did get called up to the big leagues in a little over 2 years' time. So it was a very wise decision on his part that I benefited from, and I'm very grateful for that.
Talking about that legacy that Jim Cott got from his father, some of that wisdom that led to a 25-year career in Major League Baseball. Jim also is a longtime award-winning television analyst of the game, currently working for the MLB Network Showcase with Mr. Bob Costas. And his new book, just released this spring, is called If These Walls Could Talk, New York Yankees. And you're listening to On the Road here on Faith Radio. I've had the chance to hear you speak before, Jim, and you speak very eloquently, very forcefully about your faith, so I wanted to make sure and ask you, when was it that faith became an integral part of your life?
Well, I was raised in a very, I call it strict. I think nowadays, as I've grown and matured, I would look at it as a legalistic Dutch Reformed church, and I think as a youngster, we were all rather fearful of you know, what we were going to do that wasn't proper, and that there was this set of rules where you take the good things that you've done that you think are good things, and then you measure them against the bad things.
Right.
And if the good things outweigh the bad, why, from a spiritual standpoint, you're fine. So I was raised in that kind of atmosphere and raised the right way. But I found out as I got out into the world, a lot of temptations out there. You make a lot of mistakes, and there's a lot of guilt, and I was fortunate along the way to come in contact with a lot of good pastor teachers that taught me a lot about faith and grace, and you know that none of us are perfect. There was only one person that was perfect, and so we have to realize that we're going to make mistakes, but you know, it's like the fundamentals of a sport. I mean, the main fundamental of Christianity is, if you really believe that Jesus Christ was and is who he says he was, and if you believe in the virgin birth, the crucifixion, the resurrection, that's the basic fundamental of Christianity. And every day I make a lot of mistakes, but I know that I live a life of faith and grace, and I'm grateful for that. So I think from those early days, I've grown from sort of a legalistic viewpoint on Christianity to one that I now understand what grace is all about, and certainly that's been very it's created a great inner peace for me.
Oh, that's great to hear. Such freedom and such joy. in that concept of grace as we talk with Jim Cott here on Faith Radio. You know, Jim, your career is now looked at as a model of consistency, one of the longest tenures of all time for a pitcher, in fact, which is a remarkable statistic. But, Jim, were there moments when failures really stacked up for you and you did think about giving up your dream and maybe doing something else?
Well, they never did. I was fortunate. I mean, I went through some bumps in the road. I came back my first year in the minor leagues. I didn't have a particularly good year. I won five. I lost six. So I had some dominant games, but I also got knocked around a bit. And, of course, when you come out of high school or one year of college, as I did, and you're successful almost all the time, you know, it's how you deal with failure and success. And I came back that first summer. My dad said, what did you think about the season? I said, well, it wasn't a very successful season for me, but I said, I felt like I belong at this level of competition. I was afraid that maybe some of the players from the big cities like New York and Los Angeles, am I going to, you know, is the game going to be too fast for me? Am I going to get overmatched? And I didn't feel that I was at all. Now, I went out the next year to Missoula, Montana, and I didn't start out real well. I was 1-4. I'd won 1, lost 4, and my manager was my playing manager. He was a catcher. His name's Jack McKeon. Managed the Marlins to the World Series in 2003. We still stay in close touch. But Jack called me in, and this is how, you know, people can help you along the way. It's so fragile that if somebody doesn't believe in you, you know, he could have said, hey, I don't think this kid's going to make it. He's 1-4. You know, there weren't many other places I could go. The next step was back to Class D, so probably the next step for me would have been home. And he called me in. He said, look, you're going to pitch for me every 4 days. He said, you're going to go to the big leagues. I have every belief in that. You just relax and don't worry about getting off to a bad start. Well, I ended up the season leading the league in just about every pitching category. And some of the Washington, I signed with the Washington Senators, who are now the Minnesota Twins, and some of the executives came down to watch me pitch, and I had a really good game. I remember I pitched a shutout. I struck out 12 guys, and they told Jack after the game, well, you know, he had a good game, but I still don't think he's got the stuff to be a big league pitcher. And Jack said, well, I'll bet you the best steak dinner you can find. But he said, I'd stake my job on the line that this kid is going to make it. And fortunately, I had the support from somebody like Jack McKeon, and that kind of kick-started me on my way. I played a little bit the next year in Chattanooga, and then I got called up to the big leagues and sent back down for a brief period of time in 1960 from AAA ball. Actually, I pitched some AAA games up there when the St. Paul Saints and the Minneapolis Millers were in the AAA baseball. But it was guys like Jack McKeon that believed in me and didn't turn their back on me in those early years that that helped me get over those failures and eventually live out my dream.
That's fascinating stuff. We're chatting with Jim Cott, just some really remarkable insight, a great story. He's a 25-year veteran of Major League Baseball, including 15 years spent with the Minnesota Twins right here in the Upper Midwest, and a longtime award-winning television analyst of the game, currently for the MLB Network Showcase. His new book is called If These Walls Could Talk, New York Yankees. And that, you spoke to that line between failure and success, and I was curious, as a person of faith, you had that confidence, you had that affirmation that was so vital when it came to your on-the-field performance and your path to the major leagues. But, Jim, what role does faith play and has faith played for you in dealing with the failures and successes of life off the field?
Well, I think the number one thing was realizing that, you know, when this life is over, there's another one coming. And you know, everything isn't a matter of life and death, whether you're out there on the pitching mound or whether you're in business or school or whatever it might be. So I think that attitude that I got in my early years, that spiritual foundation, if you'd want to call it, kind of helped me deal with that, because I knew that my life inside was not going to be any different if I got this hitter out or if I didn't. And that's a very peaceful feeling to have. Todd McGraw, who I played with in Philadelphia, we used to kid about it. It's not on a spiritual basis at all, but be a tight situation and one of us was going to get called into the game. And Tug would say, you know, 50 years from now, no one will know if this guy hit a home run off you or not. So you just got to relax, do the best you can. And as I like to say, do your best and forget the rest. And, you know, I think that helped me a lot.
Now, you had the chance to pitch in two World Series. You snagged the World Series victory with the St. Louis Cardinals in 1982. And it was in 1965 when you were on that great Minnesota Twins team that took the Dodgers to seven games in that Fall Classic. And you, sir, started three games, I believe, against Sandy Koufax. What memories do you carry from both of those experiences?
Well, the first one, of course, it was quite a surprise, I think, and a thrill for us to get to the World Series. We certainly weren't picked as a favorite team because the Yankees were winning every year. So just winning the pennant was such an accomplishment, and we had a young enough team that, you know, you have the feeling, well, we're going to be back here. I knew we were going up against we had a much better hitting team than the Dodgers, but having to deal with Koufax and Don Drysdale was a little different. And, they beat us in seven games, and we kept thinking, well, you know, we're going to get back. Well, I never did get back with the Twins. The games I pitched against Sandy, who's become a friend, and I've had a chance to interact with him a great deal. I can remember the first time I faced him. I'd never seen him pitch in person. And game two of the World Series, we went through the lineup 1-2-3, 1-2-3, the first three innings, perfect, nothing, nothing. And I sat down, I was sitting next to Johnny Sain, our pitching coach, and I said, John, you know, if I give up a run, this game's over. Because I said, nobody can hit this guy. And we were lucky in game two. We scratched out a couple runs, and we won that one 5-1, but we never got another run off Sandy. He shut us out in game five, and he shut us out in game seven.
Wow.
And, you know, that it wasn't a crushing defeat because, hey, we got to the World Series, and we went seven games, and we'll be back. Well, then 17 years later, which is still a record for time between World Series appearances, I finally got back with the Cardinals in much more of a bit part, where I was a left-hand pitcher being called in to face left-hand hitters and didn't have a big part of it, but we ended up winning that series in seven, and that's probably my top thrill in baseball is to have been a member of that team. In fact, this year they're bringing the Twins team back to the Twin Cities. We're going to have a 50-year reunion of the 65 team, and this weekend I'm going to St. Louis, where I'll be working a game on television, Cardinals Cubs, but they're also bringing a lot of our 82 players back for a reunion of our 82 World Series team. So I'll get to share some memories from both of those.
Jim Cott is here with us for just a few more moments on the road on Faith Radio, and as you talk about celebrating some tremendous achievements in your baseball career, Jim, many people, of course, believe that you will take your place in the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame someday. You were nearly selected in the latest vote by the Veterans Committee, of course, but it's interesting to talk with you, Jim, because I think people can tell listening to you that you're a pretty content and happy guy with where you're at in life. But would that be a joy for you to experience the election to the Hall of Fame?
Well, it would be. It would not be as much of a joy if it had happened earlier and when my dad was still living, because, as you said, baseball is such a father-son game. And I've gone through the voting process for several years. I understand some of the flaws in it, some of the politics in it, some of the, you know, good fortune to have the right people on the committee. But again, I look at that from a spiritual standpoint. If and when my time comes, it will be the right time. And if it happens, that'll be great. And if it doesn't, my life is not any more, the less than my career is my career. And I'm very content with my life. If that happens, obviously, it would be a tremendous honor. But I certainly don't think a lot about it or lose any sleep over it.
Understood. Understood. Somehow I had a feeling that your answer would be along those lines. It's been a real treat talking to you. Jim Cott, a 25-year veteran of Major League Baseball. And we've been talking as well about his book released just this spring, If These Walls Could Talk, New York Yankees. And Jim, if people, and of course Jim, a master storyteller, and there's some great stories spun in this book, if people want to get a copy of the work, what's the easiest way for them to go about that, sir?
Well, I think a lot of people, even before it had an official release, which was around opening day, a lot of people have gone to Amazon.
Yeah.
And then most of your bookstores, particularly I think in the New York market, and I would hope in the Twin Cities market that a lot of your bookstores will carry it. But I know a lot of people that have just gone to Amazon and picked it up that way.
Well, sir, it's been a real treat talking to you today, and I know so many young people looked up to you during your career, and it's just a treat for a baseball fan to chat with you and realize that you're an even more decent human being than you were a pitcher, sir. So thank you once again for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me. I enjoyed the visit.
Thanks for sharing in the story of this latest episode of Faith Radio's On the Road. For more on today's conversation and the full podcast archive of all our episodes, look for On the Road when you visit myfaithradio.com.